Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to the American Overlander Podcast. I'm your host, Will Fowler from Venture to Rome. And with me today is my best buddy, Chris from Frontier State Overland. Thank you for being here, Chris.
Hey, Willis. Thanks for having me.
And it's nice to be in the same room together again. We've decided to start trying to be in the same space when we record these podcasts as much as possible.
Yeah, this is the way to do it. Like, I think it was the Trail Chasers that they do that, right?
Yeah. Like every week, like 10 guys get into the back of a pickup truck and they drive over to the one guy's house and they all record a podcast together.
That sounds pretty great. Yeah.
So we're doing the Venture to Rome version and the Frontier State Overland version of that. But today we are talking about whether or not you should keep your current rig or buy a new rig. And this is a very poignant discussion for you and I, Chris, because we are both looking at this decision currently, and I think we're both kind of coming down on opposite sides of it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate because you're actively researching different types of rigs and I'm kind of, you know, watching vicariously this whole process. And yeah, I've kind of come to a little bit of a different conclusion.
Yeah. So, okay. So we will get into our personal decisions and I've been sharing some of mine. Like I've kind of opened up my process with my followers on Instagram and YouTube, and I'm making some videos about it. And so, you know, I'm going to be pretty transparent with the process that I have for, you know, my new rig, but I'm also not sure what I'm going to do with my current rig. So I'm like, you know, this is very poignant for me because it's like, what should you do? So let's just talk about first, like why you might want to keep your current rig. And let's talk about our current rigs. So I have a 2013 JKU Sahara, Frankenstein Sahara, that's kind of been turned into somewhere between a Sahara and a JKU because of all the modifications I've put onto it.
Oh, you mean like a Rubicon?
What did I say?
You said a JKU. It's already a JKU, Will.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Thank you for correcting me. Yes. So it's somewhere between a Sahara and I almost said a Wrangler. Oh my gosh.
It is also a Wrangler.
And a Wrangler. Wow.
It's also a Jeep.
Mr. Redundant. Yeah. And a Rubicon. So because I put a ton of stuff on it. I put pneumatic air lockers from ARB. I put new gearing in it. I put quicker sway bar disconnects, which is not like pressing a button, but I often can disconnect my sway bars really fast. And some other stuff in it that have kind of upgraded it to be more of an off-road focused vehicle. But you have is it a 2014?
Yeah. So I have a 2014, Rubicon Unlimited, and it's been modified quite a bit. And mine is, I just cleared, oh boy, I'm almost at 119,000 miles.
Oh yeah. I should say my 2013 has, I think, 81,000 miles on it. So it's not a high mile car for it being a 2013. Yeah. And honestly, yours isn't it's not that high miles for a 2014.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, I don't know, like crossing that 100,000 mile mark, it becomes kind of like a mental game. It's like, ooh, I hit 100,000 miles. I should expect all these things to go wrong.
Yeah.
Well, you know, she still starts up and still runs really strong. And, but you know, there's kind of like that mental thing where it's like, okay, once you cross that 100,000 mile mark, are a bunch of things going to start breaking?
Mm-hmm. Right?
And, I don't know. That hasn't been my experience.
Have you had anything with that rig, like any leaks of any sort or anything?
Well, it's funny that you say that because I had an exchange with Doc Wrangler, where he was replacing his engine oil cooler. And I said, oh, I've never replaced that. And Doc, if you're listening, I was wrong. I actually did, because during the height of COVID, I had to crash at a neighbor's mother-in-law quarters.
Wow.
And when I was there, the neighbor came out, and this is our buddy Joel.
That was the power wagon. Okay. I was like, wow, you're staying in somebody's mother-in-law's house? Oh, yes, their guest, yeah. Their guest's cottage thing.
Yeah. Yes, lock up your mother-in-law's Frontier State.
Chris is in town.
But Joel came out, and he's like, hey, you know, you got a little leak. And sure enough, I needed to get the engine oil cooler swapped out, which I guess is something that is pretty pretty normal for a lot of the Wranglers.
How much did it cost to do that?
Oh, it wasn't bad. Yeah, I want to say it was like $500 or something.
I feel like every time you go to the dealer to get something done, and you go to like the best shop in town probably, it's like $1,000. Whenever I walk in the door, I'm like, whatever it is, they're going to find a way to charge me $1,000 anytime I go in.
Yeah, and you're not wrong. But this one, it wasn't bad. It was one of those things, like I went in there, dropped it off, and picked it up later on in the afternoon. And it's something that it's a warrantied part. And when I got that done, it was probably pushing 90,000 miles. I've heard of people like having to replace them sooner and having to go through like multiples of them. But for me, that's like the one thing that I've had to do. The only other thing that I've had to replace are, I had to replace ball joints at about 100,000 miles, but that's because I'm running bigger tires.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing was my front drive shaft. I had to get a double cardan front drive shaft because I just did a, like an exhaust spacer or something when I first got my lift. And that was like at 75,000 miles. So I had, about 50,000 miles on it since I had like the lift put on.
Yeah.
Where, and that, so those are both things that are just kind of wear and tear. If you don't like pay for it up front, you're going to pay for it later.
Yeah.
And I did. And then the ball joints, those things just like, they wear out.
Yeah.
So, but as far as like anything that's gone wrong, that's it.
Yeah. That's like basic maintenance stuff.
Yeah.
My 2013 JKU Wrangler Sahara. So I just want to get all those words correct this time. I've had all kinds of stuff, and it's not like the engine problems. Like I haven't had any engine problems, but boy, oh boy, have I had my fair share of misadventures with, doing modifications to it. So because mm-hmm. you haven't really had to modify your rig outside of like putting a new suspension on it so you can put bigger tires on it, and then maybe some geolocation brackets for your control arms, and then, like your new drive shaft, which just kind of, wore out because you had a lift. Like, I wouldn't say that you've had to do too much. Me, on the other hand, so I put new gears in it. I didn't do it myself, and lockers in it. And I took it to a place that literally screwed every single thing up. And I'm not going to name them because I don't want to get into bashing, but like, it was really bad. Like they put in the gears wrong, and we drove to Moab, and on the way back, like there was this massive vibration coming from my rear end. And that was another, like, that was like an extra $500 that I had to pay for to, because of, some kind of part that from my perspective, they didn't put in right. And then the lockers like never worked. they never really connected them in any sort of a way. Like they didn't even put the solenoids onto the air compressor. I mean, and then systematically, like everything started to fail. So both air lockers have failed at some point. And when I went into another shop that I trust very closely now to work on it. And they opened up the front diff and they're like, oh my God, it's a good thing we're opening this up right now, because it does not look good in here. It does not look good. So they kind of redid everything and made sure it was in there correctly. And I remember one time I was doing my own kind of tune-up. I think maybe it was at like 50 or 60,000 miles. I was putting in new spark plugs, and you have to take off the manifold to do that. And so remember this?
Yeah.
So I took off the manifold and I changed out the spark plugs. I think I did everything just fine. I was putting the manifold back on and I was trying to do it exactly right. And I was reading about all, how you, whatever foot pounds of torque or whatever for these manifold bolts. And I sheared one off inside the manifold. Like I sheared a bolt off and I lost it. I did not know. You were like at a dinner party or something. And I was like texting you and I was like, I just ruined my Jeep. I don't know what I'm going to do. And you like left the dinner party to come over to my house and calmed me down. And we had to drill into it. Like we put a bit into it. We had to drill into it first, I think, to get a bit into it, to get that bolt out. And then we went on a big trip. Remember we went on that overlanding trip through Walla Walla. And I think I got a bolt that didn't quite fit that I just kind of put in there.
Yep. And you were calling dealerships.
Yeah.
Asking like, okay, can I get this bolt? Like, it shouldn't be a big deal. It's just a bolt.
Yeah.
Well, it was a big deal because nobody had it.
That's right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. And so then, and then my drive shaft, I mean, I documented the drive shaft failure pretty well. The Rezepa joint, that was the joint that I had installed. So like I take some responsibility for, I mean, I take a lot of responsibility for anything that I installed that didn't work. That was no fun having that go out in the middle of, you know, the backcountry of Idaho. And then I put in a new drive shaft. I got an Adams double cardan, which so far has been great. I mean, I hardly put any miles on it. And just, you know, I got a bad switch box right now. Like my switch box keeps shorting out cause it's just not a good switch box. Like you should not go cheap on your switch box. People, you should not do that. In fact, I'm making a video, a collab video right now with other YouTube channels. And the topic or the theme is like, what are the worst modifications you've ever done to your rig? Cause we all have stupid stuff that we've done. And I have two that I'm talking about. One is, I got these inserts for the headlights that were like black.
I remember you sent us pictures of those.
Yeah. It made it look like my Jeep was wearing mascara. And all you guys responded with like puke emojis and like, what are you doing, you idiot? Why would you do that to your Jeep? And so those went right in the trash. And then the other is this crappy switch box. Like I'll be driving and my off-road lights will just short out in the middle of the night. It's just terrible. Like it's just an awful setup and you just should spend the money on a good switch box. So in any case, my point is you've had a much less stressful experience with your rig than I have with mine. And some of that is my own doing. I fully admit that. And some of it is not my own doing. None of it's really the Jeep's fault. Like the Jeeps, I think I had a O2 sensors go bad that I replaced, which was not very expensive. And I had an oil sensor go bad that was $1,000 to replace because they had to like, you know, so they say. I never trust them at the dealer. They're like, well, we've got to like take out the engine and take all the wheels off. And then we've got to turn it upside down and shake it for 3 days and then put it all back together. It's going to cost $1,000. So I don't really think they're telling me the truth, but that's the one thing. I threw a code when we were out on the South Fork of the Boise River.
Oh, yeah.
With Joel, actually. And it was like a, I don't know, P35 code or something like that.
And you texted Kate and she was able to look it up for you.
Yeah, via my Garmin. I texted her and I was like, what does this mean? She's like, yeah, it's fine. Keep going. Yeah. So in any case, I've had a different experience than you have with my rig.
Yeah, I don't know. And anytime you modify your rig, you know, you're taking something that the manufacturer has spent, you know, millions and millions of dollars designing.
Yeah.
To get it just right. And then what do? We tear it all apart.
It's so true, especially with Jeeps.
Yeah.
That's like, who has a stock Jeep? I mean, look, if you're listening to this and you have a stock Jeep, no, there's zero judgment. But like, there is this stigma. It's like, well, you get your Jeep and now what?
Yeah. What's the first mod you're going to do?
Exactly.
Yeah. And like our buddy Ryan, he has the stock Wrangler Rubicon.
Yeah, proudly.
And, you know, he kind of has taken the line and that, you know, you just leave it stock. It's super capable as is.
It really is, by the way.
Yeah.
It may not look as cool going up the obstacles or whatever, but it's pretty dang capable.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, like there's been a few trails that we've gone on and it takes him longer to go up. And he has to pick his lines more carefully and things like that. However, you know, he doesn't have to deal with the broken drive shaft either. So
that's true. In fact, one of the times we went out and did a little technical driving with him, that's when you broke your drive shaft.
Yeah.
Your Zeppa joint went out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I had to do the entire trail in two-wheel drive.
Yeah, I remember that.
So, yeah.
So I guess what we're saying is you should never mod your Jeep.
No,
that's not what we're saying at all.
No, we're clearly not saying that.
100% mod your Jeep is one of the coolest things in the world.
Yeah, and you know, or whatever rig you have, you know, make it your own. But you know, after you know having these rigs for a certain amount of time and putting a lot of miles on them, and you know, for me, I daily drive mine, so there's a lot of commuter miles on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had people ask me like, why don't you get a little commuter car? And the reason is because I love driving my Jeep on 37.
Yeah.
I work at a school and the kids at school love to ask me questions about it. And they call it the monster Jeep and stuff like that. And
you also have some like PTSD from driving a subcompact car for a while. Yes. Like before you got your first Jeep, uh-huh. you had to drive like, this is also gets into your deep hatred of Subarus. You had to drive, it was like a Subaru Legacy wagon or something,
An
right?
Impreza.
An Impreza.
A little Impreza. It wasn't even like a cool Impreza, like a WRX,
no.
which I love iconic cars and I do feel that the WRX is an iconic car.
Sure.
But yeah, this was my wife's college car and it's this little base Subaru Impreza, which, you know, to be honest, it did great in the snow.
You hated that car though.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially because I had a 97 Cherokee XJ mm-hmm. with the 4 liter and that thing, you know, I traded it in for the family wagon, which my wife drove, you know, the big family car.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And so, I ended up driving the Subaru Legacy.
So you had to give up your Jeep.
Or Impreza, sorry.
You gave up your Jeep. And those XJs are just awesome. I remember yours was blue. I had a red one. Mm-hmm. And I bought one because you had one in college. And you traded it in. You went from driving an XJ to a Subaru.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard shift. Nothing against Subaru people at all. But like, if you're not like looking to drive a Subaru, mm-hmm. it's like the car that you have to drive because you traded in your Jeep. It seems like how the mighty have fallen.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of people too that, you know, that are attracted to certain cars, you know, whether it's a Subaru or a Jeep. And for me, you know, I've always been clear that I'm a Jeep guy.
Yep.
And so, you know, for better or worse, a lot of my personality is tied up in my rig.
Yeah.
You know, and I purpose build them. So that way it kind of reflects my personality a little bit and what I like to do. And so it was a hard shift to go from this Cherokee that I had, which I had an air locker on the back and, mm-hmm. you know, a slight lift on it and stuff. And to have to sell that and go to, I think anything else, whether it was a Subaru, you know, I don't know, like what, insert random car.
You're right. I was just being hard on Subarus. And the truth is like, probably the reason that you're harder on Subarus now is because that's the car that you had to go to.
Yeah.
But it could have been Honda Civic. It could have been any other kind of car that was like that, that you probably would like avoid because you have like a little PTSD mm-hmm. from having to not drive a Jeep basically since you're a Jeep guy.
Yeah. And it's funny because I feel like we're doing a little therapy session here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're working out my Subaru issues.
I think we're working out my Subaru issues. You don't seem to have any Subaru issues. You seem to be you just don't want to drive one anymore. But okay. So it's interesting that you say your car's your personality because I think that actually plays into like the keep a used or buy new
mm-hmm.
a bit. And what's interesting about that is, you stayed in Idaho and I left
mm-hmm.
after college. I went to the Midwest and then went to the East Coast. And here, I think everywhere in the West, well, most places really, there's a lot of your identity that's tied up in your car.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of car do you drive? How do you drive it? What kind of, I don't know, how does it look? You know, how do you keep it up? There's all this like that we tie into our mode of transportation. And I left for Kansas City for grad school. And then after grad school, I moved to New York City and we sold our cars. We just sold them. Like, why have a car in New York City? It's like pointless and super expensive. So that's when I sold my XJ. So I had mine in Kansas City and then I sold it right before we moved to New York. And spending 6 years living in Manhattan, cars are not part of your identity at all. In fact, mm-hmm. like the coat you wear in the winter is more of your identity than a car is because
mm-hmm.
nobody has a car. Anybody who has a car, it just gets beat up in New York City. I mean, it's not a good place to have a car.
Yeah.
You're just going to get bumped up and scratched. And so I came back from New York when we moved back to Boise and I had lost a lot of that. Like what's your, you know, tied up to your car. So we had like a Toyota Camry and an old, I don't know, like a 96 Ford Explorer.
Oh, I forgot about the Explorer.
Yeah, with 200,000 miles on it that Kate's parents gave us. And I was happy because I had something to drive. I was totally happy with it. And it wasn't until later when we got the Jeep, when we got Finn, our current Jeep, that I started to get much more wrapped up in the brand, the identity. And I fully identify as a Jeep person now, but I also love other cars. I really love other cars too. We have more than Jeeps in our garage, and we will have more than Jeeps in our garage. We'll have all kinds of different cars. So that's a little bit different for me. It was hard to sell my XJ, but I never really had a feeling I'm driving this car and I wish I were driving another car. I never really experienced that. I didn't have to pull up to a parking lot at work and feel like I was being judged for better or worse by getting out of the thing that drove me there.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny you say that because I work at an elementary school and I had this little fourth grader and, he's like one of the, when I say little fourth grader, he's literally one of the shortest kids in his class. Mm. And he's got this great sense of humor and was just a fun kid. And he looked at me, he's like, "Mr. Taggart, is that the car you're driving?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "It's like a little bubble." And I was like, "What?" And he's like, "Yeah, he's like, you're driving a bubble." And he started laughing. And I was like, "Oh man." I was like, I'm getting,
ridiculed by
dunked on by a little fourth grader that can't even drive, I'm like, "What?"
Was that your comeback? "You can't even drive.
You're just short." No. I was just like,
"And you hurt my feelings."
Yeah, and I'm a elementary counselor, and so it's one of those things where I was kind of like, "Oh. Yeah, so I didn't try to come up with a comeback and burn him back or anything, but at the same time I was like, already he kind of spoke to how I was already feeling.
Oh yeah,
and,
right.
And so that didn't actually help at all because it was just a validation as to all these doubts that I had about driving this little car. And
oh, this happened when you were driving the Subaru.
Yeah.
Okay. It makes a lot more sense. Okay. Yeah. I was like, "But you're driving a Jeep and it was just bounces off." And no, you're talking about it actually hit you a little bit deeper.
Because
it made fun of your car.
Yeah. He's making fun of the Impreza. And
right.
Yeah. So anyway,
so let's get back to the decisions because I do think that factors into whether or not you should buy new or keep your used or buy used. Mm-hmm. It's like, so when do you trade out? And it's a little bit more complicated decision. And when you're talking about what we do, because it's not like, I'm going to drive my rig until something goes wrong and then I'm going to get a fix. And at some point I'll decide whether or not I want to keep putting money into it, or I want to trade it in or sell it and buy something new that I don't have to put as much money into. It's a very logical decision kind of matrix, if you ask me. But when you are going off grid and you're way, 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 way out there, really you don't want anything to ever go wrong.
Yeah.
So it's like you get an oil leak or something. I don't know. Let's just say it's a bad oil leak out in the backcountry. How are you getting that rig back? I mean, you need to be able to drive it home, and it needs to be able to do that over and over and over and over again. And so for me, my rig has had things go wrong, and I have a little bit of lack of confidence in taking it out. It's getting, I would say it's low miles for 2013, but I just went out to start it the other day and the battery wouldn't start. The battery's dead, dead. So I jumped it, let it run, ran errands in it, came back next day, dead again.
Oh, so you need a new dead battery. Again.
Got a new battery. But I'm like, well, what else is wrong?
Yeah.
It's a psychological thing. It's like a trust thing. And I've never gotten stranded in that rig, never really had any major problems. Even when the drive shaft went out, it was still very drivable. But, it's for me, it's a little bit of, I am looking to get a rig that I know from its very beginnings, because I bought that one used, And so I'm looking about buying a new rig, something that I can just kind of, I don't know, maybe start a new relationship with or something that I can trust a little bit more when we're out there. So that's part of me, you know, going towards a new rig. So you haven't maybe had that same experience, and you've driven your cars longer than I ever have. Like, I think your XJ, you drove to had over 200,000 miles on it, right?
Yeah, it had, when I finally sold it, it had a little over 300,000 miles on it. It was, yeah, it was a ton. And I think, you know, when you were gone in Manhattan, there was like a, I was, you know, here driving my XJ and, you know, and learning from it because it was also having, because it was a high mileage, it was having things go wrong, you know, whether it be like the alternator or, you know, battery differential going out. I broke some motor mounts, all sorts of stuff. And so through that experience, they were, you know, of course horrible at the time. However, they were all things that broke in the more, in like the most convenient places, like at home or close to home. And like, I never actually had to have it towed anywhere.
Right.
You know, I was always able to get it to the dealership and, or, you know, our local mechanic. And so, for me, that was like a, you know, kind of a learning process and, you know, and I modified it a little bit. And so, you know, Ripley, which is the name of my current rig, you know, she's basically the third rig that I've built. And I've learned a lot. And so I think some of the things that haven't gone wrong with Ripley that have gone wrong on Finn are mistakes that I would have made had I not had the experience of building a rig before.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, there's certain things you can kind of cheap out on, but there's other things you can't. Like all
switchbox.
Yeah.
covered this already, but switchbox.
Yeah. You know, and even then, you know, like the switchbox that I have, it's not the most expensive one, but it's not the cheapest one either.
The one that you have is a good one. Which one do you have?
Oh man, I can't even remember, but I can't find it anymore.
Yeah, I think it was bought by Vox Switch or
something
like that. I think they were purchased by that, but they made basically an affordable alternative to S-Pod at the time. It's that same kind of rocker switch technology with the relays under the hood, but the relays are, that's probably the most important piece is how that relay is put in there. And I remember, cause I had that one too, before I went to an 8 switch, switch box.
Yeah.
And it was solid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wanted the S-Pod, but I couldn't afford it. You know, it was just way out of my price range. But you know, other things like my suspension, you know, I spent more on it. And my wife at the time was just like, you know, why are you spending this much on it? And I got a JKS, J-Spec, with the Fox shocks.
How much did it cost?
So, back when we did it, like, I don't know, in 2017, something like that, 16, 17, like it was around $3,000.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's expensive.
Yeah. But that's actually installed.
Okay.
So, and you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I have some mechanical knowledge, but I'm also very honest with myself and I wanted somebody to install it, who knows what they're doing.
Yep.
And I had a really great relationship with the dealership there and, the people that work there, and I still do. And so they still do a lot of my maintenance and they actually, you know, I've priced it out and they're really comparable and they give you a special deal because you buy the rig there. Like their hourly rate is something like, you know, $75 an hour.
Yeah. That's really cheap.
Which is really cheap, especially not just for a dealer, but for a lot of like mechanics.
Yeah.
Like just period.
Yeah.
And I know they don't charge that now, but they do for me because I bought it there and I had that agreement with them.
Yeah.
And so it's, and then I have the added benefit of, I know it's done by a certified tech.
Yeah.
You know, and they're going to do a way better job than I am.
That's true. I mean, they'll do a better job than you will for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've had certified Jeep techs do the work on your rig. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely going to get a new rig. I don't know if I'm going to get rid of Finn or not. Mm-hmm. I love that rig. Part of me wants to just drop a demon in it or something, you know, part mm-hmm. of me wants to keep it and just make it a project rig for the next 5 or 6 years and just do some really wild stuff with it.
Portal axles.
Yeah, exactly. Portal axles. Oh my God. Those are so cool. I would love to do that, but that stuff's really expensive. I think I would probably have to, beg, steal, and borrow to make some stuff happen. And it doesn't make a lot of financial sense to keep that rig if I've just spent a ton of money on a new rig. Mm-hmm. So I got to figure that out. But I'm really loath to sell that Jeep. So correct me if I'm wrong. I'm loath to sell my Jeep. Because I, number one, have an emotional connection to it. It's mm-hmm. my adventure rig. It's taking my family all over the place into these incredible experiences. Number two, I love JKs, JKUs. I love that. I love that there's somewhere between an analog rig and a digital rig, know, but they still kind of lean analog based on what we're seeing on the market today. I love that. I love that it's hard to get it in four wheel low. It's you got to throw your elbow back and lean into it and it kind of jerks into that.
Yeah. You feel it click in.
Yep. Yep. And I love that about it. So I really don't like these rigs. Well, I shouldn't say I don't like the rigs. I really don't like the features on the rigs where it's a dial. It's mm-hmm. I'm dialing in to four low. And look, if you have a dial, I know I'm hedging here, but if you have a dial, that's great. And there's nothing wrong with it. I just don't like it. I like to grab the shifter knob and yank it back and know that it's in four-wheel drive. When I was a kid, we would get out and actually lock the hubs. We would get out and turn the hubs and lock them. And then it's locked, versus a dial. You're is it in four low? Well, I turn the dial to four low. Mm-hmm. So yes. But when you are putting the shifter into four low, it's there.
Yeah, you can feel it the linkages moving and slotting into place.
Yes.
And Elsha, she had a Chevy Colorado, which we really enjoyed, but it had a dial to shift it into four high and low and stuff. And I don't know, I would shift it the four wheel drive symbol would come on. But there wasn't really anything to indicate that it was actually in four-wheel drive.
Right.
And so I was kind of is it? I guess I just have to trust that it is.
Yeah.
But, I was missing that connection.
Yeah.
And it never gave me reason that it wasn't, any reason to expect that it wasn't in four-wheel drive. But I hear what you're saying. And the JKs still have that.
Yep.
And honestly too,
the JLs and the Gladiators do too.
Yeah. Her Gladiator now, you have to, I would say it's even harder to shift it into four wheel drive in the Gladiator than it is in the JK.
they're like, we've gotten customer feedback that they like it being hard,
really difficult. Yeah.
So now let's just make it a little bit more difficult. Get what they want. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe this factors in, maybe the JT factors in, but you have chosen, at least for the time being, mm-hmm. to stick with Ripley, not replace Ripley, to keep that JKU and maybe just give it a refresh of some sort.
Exactly. And that's something where, you and I have talked about me starting a channel for a while.
Yep.
And, I've kind of tried to figure okay, what angle can I take? Well, there are so many JKs out there. And, they're getting pretty long in the tooth now.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have an 18, those are still pretty, pretty recent.
Yeah.
But anyway, and by the way, the 18 was the last year that they made the JKU. So for me, kind of the decision that I came is that this is my third built rig. I really like where it is right now. She's always been, reliable. She starts every time, she's running really strong. I took it in for the 100,000 mile tune-up, and I asked the mechanic, like the tech, you know, I was like, hey, you know, how's everything looking? And he's like, yeah, man. He's like, it's running strong. You're good to go for another 100,000 miles. And I'm like, okay. Yep. You know, I get it serviced regularly. I'm really, you know, religious about making sure I follow the maintenance schedule. And like I said, I take it in and have the dealership do it because they've always been really good.
Yeah.
You know, I know people have different experiences with dealerships and mechanics and stuff, but I feel like I've got it dialed in. Mm-hmm. And so, she's reliable. She's built the way I want. And I kind of look at anything that I need to replace now. I'm just going to replace it with something better.
Yeah.
And keep building, you know, building her up,
mm-hmm.
you know? So like the suspension now has roughly 80,000 miles on it. And so, you know, I'm going to start looking at, you know, do I need to replace a whole suspension? Probably not. But, you know, like what can I do as far as there's some really cool new things about like shocks and, you know, shock and spring packages. And then giving her just like a refresh too.
Yep.
But, you know, I feel really confident that she's not going to leave me stranded. I hope I'm not jinxing myself. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And then there's like some really cool new things about like powertrain stuff that's coming out where, for instance, one of the things that I love about Elsha's Gladiator is it basically has the same engine. It's got the 3.6 yep. Pentastar,
which is a great engine.
It is a great engine.
Tried and true.
Yeah. And, but she has this 8-speed in it.
Yeah. The transmission.
8-speed transmission. Yeah. Yep. And it makes that thing into a whole new animal.
It does. It keeps it in the power band the whole time.
Yeah.
So much peppier.
And it's so smooth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've seen like, there's some different aftermarket companies where they will do 8-speed swaps with a 3.6.
There is, but there's also the America's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
Which one is it? They have like three options, but they all come with an 8-speed for the JK.
Yeah. Yep. And so, yeah, there's like the, you know, of course the 392 and version with the 8-speed. And then there's, you know, like a Hellcat. And I think there's like another one too.
Dude, can you imagine dropping a 392 into a JK rear wheel drive?
Yeah.
Like I think you might snap your axle.
Well, it's interesting because American Expedition Vehicles, they used to offer a 5.7 Hemi swap kit and a 6.4 Hemi swap kit for the JKUs. They don't offer them anymore, but they would leave the stock axles.
Hmm.
The stock, yeah, I think you had to have Rubicon axles, like the Dana 44s.
Right.
And I don't know if you had to have them trussed or, you know, put chromoly axles in it or something. I just don't know about that. But honestly, like for me, if I did need to replace the powertrain, you know, there's that temptation to go, like for me, probably more like a 5.7 Hemi swap. Mm-hmm. So nothing like super crazy because I do want more power.
That's my biggest complaint, honestly, about the JKU in general is just it's not underpowered. So it has power, like you can do whatever you need to do in that rig.
Mm-hmm.
I've never like got to a point and not been able to actually go up a hill or something. Like it has power, but it could use more power.
Mm-hmm.
100%. It could use a lot more power.
Yeah. And there, and so like, you know, without drawing it out too much longer, there's some really interesting companies now that have all sorts of different, you know, engine swaps, whether it's, you know, the 3.6 with the 8-speed transmission or sticking a 5.7 Hemi with an 8-speed or the 392 or, you know, all the way up into, you know, Hellcat territory. Or there's even companies now that offer the new Chevy LT engine, LT V8, which is the one that they, if I remember right, has taken, you know, the place of the LS.
LS, yeah.
And those you can get with both 8-speeds or a 10-speed.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And it's, and appears to be cheaper than the Hemi and they run cooler.
Wow.
So, but at the same time too, it's like this engine is running just fine. And then, I don't know if it does break out in the middle of nowhere, are you going to be able to get it worked on?
I worry. So So we're friends with Sean from Story Till Now, KC250, both BC guys, both just went through these pretty massive engine swaps. So they both...
I would call them bonkers.
Yeah. They
have. And I say that with all affection.
They're both crazy and one is insane. So so Sean dropped in a Hellcat, right? It was a Hellcat, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, it's the Hellcat. It's like this 640 horsepower or something like that. And then Casey dropped in the Demon, which is 800 horsepower or something. And you know, we're chatting and like the sound that that Hellcat makes,
mm-hmm.
It's like unbelievable. That sound, it's like, it is wonderful and scary at the same time. And then the sound that the Demonator makes is like this weird whistling because it has a turbo in it that when the turbo spools.
Oh no, it's a supercharger.
Sorry, a supercharger. Yeah, thank you. Supercharger. Yeah. When that thing starts going, it's just they're like comic book rigs at this point. So I think, and Sean and Casey, if you're listening to this, I hope this does not happen to your rigs. I really hope this does not happen to your rigs. But I think you run a higher chance of something going wrong when you do a massive engine swap like that and then drive a rig that it wasn't built for mm-hmm. out into the boonies or whatever. There's a bigger chance that something would break or something would go wrong because you've done kind of this extreme modification to it versus just driving a 3.6.
Yeah. And there's a lot to that. You know, anytime you do like an engine swap, whether it's a V8 or just taking a new engine in, you run the risk that it's not done right.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the cons to keeping an older rig is like, if you're going to run that risk and roll the dice that, you know, you could, you know, be out in the middle of nowhere on a trip and then have something go catastrophically wrong with the rig.
Yeah.
Where it's undrivable. Well, like, you know, if we're at like, you know, Boulder Basin or the middle of the Owyhees or the BDR,
mm-hmm.
You know, you're out in some really, you know, isolated places.
Yeah.
And so what do you do at that point? Of course, that's something that can happen with any rig.
Any rig. And by the way, get a Garmin GPS or other kind of GPS communication device system. Mm-hmm. If you're ever going out, that's like when people say, well, what's my first mod? I say, get a GPS communication device.
Yeah.
Number one, just do it. So if something does happen, at least you can communicate back and have somebody come pick you up. So I'm leaning new, you're staying. I'm not leaning new. I'm going new. You're going used for at least I'm going new. You're staying used for the time being. And you just mentioned that you're thinking about engine swaps or transmission swaps or, suspension refreshes or upgrades. And so, I think it's probably fair that I share what I'm thinking about in terms of what my new rig might be. So the really, really cool thing is that I have awesome friends that have awesome rigs. So I have had a chance to test drive a bunch of different rigs and I'm really thinking about like what's going to serve me and my family as a great overlanding rig for me and my family, something that has, you know, really good power, something that has amazing off-road, consistent off-road capabilities, something that's comfortable and has some, you know, tech upgrades, something that looks cool. Like, let's be honest, like looking cool is important. I think we tend to like play that down as like, it's not a real thing, but it's a real thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And then the last one is just like intangibles. Like, what are those things? Like, how does it make you feel when you look at it?
Yeah.
You know, so I've been looking and thinking about all that stuff a lot lately.
Well, and like right now too, this is like the perfect time for you to be looking at new rigs because like, for instance, when you and I went out and got our JKs, like honestly, the choices for like true off-road rigs, the pickings were kind of slim.
It was Jeep or Taco.
Yeah. It was Jeep or Taco. You could do 4Runner. And then there was also the FJ Cruiser. Ford didn't really have anything at that time, unless you wanted to go for like a full-size truck.
Yep.
Same thing with Chevy. Chevy, you know, has gotten a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
you know, with like their ZR2 models.
Yep.
But like right now, this is the different options that you have at your disposal.
Yeah, we're in the sunset of the internal combustion engine, and it just so happens to be like the best time ever to buy an off-road rig. Because it's like they're all going out with a bang, you know? Oh,
yeah, like the new Raptors.
Yeah.
Like, you know, not just like the Raptor F-150, but then you have the Raptor Bronco, and there's going to be a Raptor Ranger.
A Ranger, and you've got the TRX.
Yeah.
I mean, whoo, delally, that TRX, man. Holy cow.
And the Power Wagon.
Yep.
And then in, you know, GM and Chevy, you got the ZR2 Silverado now,
mm-hmm.
and the ZR2 Colorado.
Yeah. So I haven't really driven any of those rigs here. Here's what I'm thinking though. So, I reached out to my followers and, subscribers, and I said, well, like, what do you think? I'm thinking about a new rig. And I got a lot of feedback, and I had to screen it, for new rigs. Cause a lot of times it's like, you know, get an old Land Cruiser or, you know, which are amazing rigs, but it's like, no, I'm not going to do that on this build. It's going to be a new one. And so I kind of narrowed it down to a Toyota 4Runner,
mm-hmm.
a Dodge Power Wagon, a Ford Bronco,
a Gladiator.
So like so many people said Gladiator, and Gladiators are like, have become like the de facto overlanding build these days. I mean, look at the YouTube channels. Mm-hmm. They have Gladiators or they want Gladiators. And like YouTube channels aren't the be all end all, but like all my friends, let's just say this, all my friends have Gladiators, including you.
Yeah.
And because they're just such a versatile platform to build overlanding rigs. And also considering staying with the Jeep Wrangler, just getting maybe a newer Jeep Wrangler. And so I had the opportunity to drive those rigs. And what I found out was really interesting. So it was really cool to drive a Bronco, a Gladiator, and a Power Wagon in the same day on the exact same trail with the same obstacles, mm-hmm. because it really highlighted the differences between those rigs. So the first one I drove was the Bronco, and the Bronco felt like I was driving a Jeep. It felt like I was driving a Jeep that was aired down with the sway bars disconnected. Now, we weren't doing crazy obstacles, so I'm not going to talk about articulation and all that. Like, I know that changes a lot. But with the independent front suspension, it was really smooth and took the things that, the little whoops and things that we were going over very, very easily. It had a really awesome turning radius. And it just kind of, we went through, we kind of had to weave in between some big boulders and things. And it did that just fine, like no problem. Really felt similar to driving a Wrangler. Then I test drove the Gladiator, the JT, and it like felt like a Jeep, which I loved. It was like, yes, it's a Jeep, but it's just a little bit different, upgraded, you know, and then I started driving it and I was like, it feels like a Jeep, except for it feels more powerful because it has that transmission.
Yeah.
But it also feels like a truck because it was longer.
Yep.
And in some ways that was cool because it was actually a more comfortable ride. But in other ways, like weaving between the boulders and things, it did it just fine, but it was different for me. I'm not used to driving that long of a rig.
Yeah, you had to really get more comfortable in picking your lines. Like with the Bronco, you just went.
Right, exactly.
And then with the Gladiator, you were, you know, had to, you know, take a little bit more time to figure out, okay, like where, when I turn around this or drive around this, is it going to, the back tire, is it going to,
yeah. Am I going to scrape the back panel? Like, and you were with me cause you were running the camera while I was kind of doing this on camera and talking about it, which in this video will come out soon. And then I drove the Power Wagon, and the Power Wagon like wins on comfort. Oh my God. It's massive inside of that thing. Just, you've got so much space. It's just so nice. And it's got a ton of power. It's got the 392. It's got the 6.4 Hemi in it.
Yeah.
So
it wins on the sound too.
It does. Yes, all that. And then I drove it through the obstacles and I was like, not only was I afraid I was going to like damage the rig, Joel, who owns the Power Wagon, like he was like, he got out of the rig.
He was spotting you.
He was like, I need to spot you. And I was like, do you? He was like, yes. And so.
And by the way, this is with like the full like 360 cameras on and stuff. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it was a lot harder to drive. Yeah. This is where Rob has said to us from Revere Overland, Rob said to us, you don't really have to be a good off-road driver if you have a Jeep, but you do have to be a good off-road driver if you have a full-size rig. And mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of truth to that. Like yeah. you have to be better because mm-hmm. there's more things to think about. You have to be more careful. It just takes more of your brain to get through some of those obstacles. It takes less of your brain though when you're driving down like forest roads, like those bigger trucks, like they're just made for that. They're yeah. just so nice. They're so stable. And that's where like the Jeeps, you know, don't perform as well, mm-hmm. especially if you have a rooftop tent on and you're lifted and you're kind of bouncing around, you got some body roll on those corners and things. You have to be more careful. So I test drove those three rigs all the same day. And I remember thinking like, I wish everyone could do this. Like everyone who's going to buy a new off-road rig should really have the ability to test it off-road like that. Mm-hmm. Because I learned so much. It was so great to do that. So I then came away and we went to the Jeep lot, you and I, and we looked at new Jeeps. And boy, I got to tell you, some of those new Jeeps are pretty great. Like we saw two Mojave Gladiators.
Oh man.
And they have the stronger frame and they have like the cast iron ball joints and they have that suspension that's a little bit higher and smoother and those are very tempting. Mojaves.
Yeah. And by the way, those had me kind of, I had already decided, yes, I'm going to keep Ripley and just keep building her up. But when I saw those, I was like, you know, it made me kind of second guess myself.
Your wife. So Elsha, Chris's wife, texted me the next day and was like, you can't take him to the lot anymore.
Yeah.
It's like he found a Mojave that he wants to buy. Like, yeah, that's the Mojave that you should want to buy.
Yeah.
And there was a bunch of Wranglers, 4XEs. I'm not really into the 4XEs. I don't think that's a good off-road platform. I think we are heading that direction in general, but we got a ways to go before we get there. Yeah, so I'm in no hurry to jump into an electric vehicle of any sort where it's like the sole purpose is off-road. I might, you know, an electric vehicle that's more of a daily driver and then you're going to do some short trips close to home. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. But the stuff that we do, there's just not an option. So, so now I have some decisions to make. I really got to look at what's going to work the best for me and the family. And then like the biggest category is like those intangibles. Like, what do I want? Mm-hmm. But what gets me a little excited when I look at it? And I, you know, I have put some wheels in motion on a certain rig.
Did you find the Astrovan?
Finally, I found an Astrovan. You know what's funny, dude, is that someone posted, when I posted this question, uh-huh. they were like, if I didn't love my Astrovan so much, I would say 4Runner. Like they, oh, they, no, this
Nick
is their,
gonna want to throttle
you. this is their platform. And so like to each their own, man.
Yeah.
I'm not an Astrovan guy. So I will never buy an Astrovan for any reason, but like you love the rig that you have. Right. So yeah. Like, and anyway, this guy's an Astrovan guy. So I've put some wheels in motion. I have not signed any paperwork. I can still walk away. And I am just kind of weighing the pros and cons. I really wanted to get into a 4Runner too. Nick from Zagrunner has a really nicely built 4Runner that I would love to kind of test drive off-road, but I'm not sure if it's going to time out. Cause I'm like there, I'm like, mm-hmm. it's time to buy now. And so I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do that before I actually decide on a new rig. And to be honest with you, I think I'm really curious about the 4Runner platform, but I'm going to rent a 4Runner in Sedona. We're going to Sedona for a family vacation. We're going to do some off-roading. So I'm going to have an opportunity to do that. I think that's going to happen after I actually get my new rig. But I'm curious about that as a platform. I've never wanted a 4Runner. Like the intangibles are a zero for me. Mm-hmm. Like I've never been like, yes, I want a 4Runner. For whatever reason, it just doesn't do it for me. Like Subarus just don't do it for me. But it's used so much as an overlanding platform. I thought, you know, it's worth a look. It's worth some time in the seat to figure out like, what is this thing all about? Yes. Why do people love it so much?
Yeah. See what we're missing.
Exactly.
Because people that have, you know, 4Runners and Subarus for that matter, like, you know, just like, you know, Jeep guys and Tacoma guys, and, you know, they get really behind their platforms.
Yep.
And they love them. And, you know, we all have kind of our different journeys that take us to our different rigs or attract us to different rigs. And it's always fun to kind of see like, okay, what are some of the things that are drawing them to this?
Yeah.
Because all those platforms have their merits. And that's right. Drawbacks, their pros and their cons.
So if you want to know which way I'm leaning, I will give you a hint.
It's a Land Rover Defender.
No, it's not. That is not on the list. Look, they're in my opinion, the heyday has come and gone for those.
It's a Nissan Pathfinder.
It is not. Well, actually, could it be? No, it couldn't be. I mean,
do they still make the Pathfinder?
No, they don't make a Pathfinder, but they make the.
They make the Frontier. The
Frontier, which is kind of the same platform, I think.
Yeah, well, it's a pickup truck.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the same frame, I think.
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question.
I could be wrong about that.
Anyway, sorry, I just totally took us off the rails.
Yes. In any case, I have an incoming partnership with Metal Cloak this year, which I'm super excited about. And so basically you can go to the Metal Cloak website if you want and look at all of the rigs that they make parts for. And you can guess which of those might be my next rig, because whatever I get, it's going to be something that Metal Cloak makes parts for. And they make a lot of parts and they're really cool. And they have been like really awesome to work with. So that's my hint, is that it has to be a rig. It doesn't have to be, but it is. It is probably, because I can still pull out, but it is probably going to be a rig that Metal Cloak makes a full line of products for. So I have one last question for you before we wrap today, Chris. And that is, are you going to start a YouTube channel? We've been talking about it. You've been talking about it. Like, seems like you just need to decide whether or not you're going to stay on that pot or not.
Is this where you insert the crickets?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the answer is yes. The goal is for 2023 to be kind of the year of kind of jumping in, and I'm going to be bugging, you know, you for all sorts of creative feedback. Rob, if you're listening, I'm going to be, you know, probably bugging you for feedback and all these people that are creators. G.
G's great. He actually gives really good feedback too. He's a super smart guy.
Oh yeah. And I just feel like he would like give, this is G from BC and Rob from Revere Overland. But you know, G, I feel like he would be give you like the kindest feedback.
No, you'd be wrong about that.
Oh my, really? No, G, okay, never mind. Actually, I'm not gonna
okay, G, never mind. No, G is he's really sharp. Like G is the guy who has ripped my videos apart more than anybody else. Like give me timestamps and be like, you totally missed that one. The drone is shaky in this shot. This transition is junk. Like it's all couched under like, he's one of the kindest persons, mm-hmm. one of the kindest people I've ever met. And so like, it's not malicious, but he's got a great eye. He'll give you really targeted feedback.
Oh, nice. So, but yeah, long story short, the goal is to, you know, kind of dip my feet into making some videos too, and whether or not people want to watch them is a whole other thing. However, one of the things that I love about the videos that you make, and also, you know, like all these other people I've got to meet, like, you know, G and you know, Rob and you know, just all these folks that make videos, is that I can like watch the videos, especially the ones that where my family's been lucky enough to be part of it. And you're able to kind of come back and kind of relive that adventure.
Yeah. And that is really cool.
Yeah. And in all of, like all these creators do such a great job of being authentic, like who you see them like when you see them in the videos, that's who they are. They're just really nice, fun people to be around.
And dude, enough people have seen you in my videos that if you like took on a different persona, they'd be like, who's that guy?
Yeah.
Like who's this Frontier State Overland guy? I thought he was like this really chill guy in the Adventure Roam videos. Apparently he's a total wacko.
Well, yeah, that's probably true too.
That is true, by the way. It's 100% true. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I guess like that was a very roundabout way of saying, yes, the goal is to start making videos this year. Whether or not people want to watch them is a whole other thing, but at least, you know, I'll be able to, you know, kind of have a record of, you know, things that are happening in my life and my family's life. And even it's just like my family watching them. That's cool too.
Yeah.
But part of it is I want to kind of, spend a little time, you know, showing how to refresh a rig.
Yeah.
Because I find myself, you know, longing for kind of is that the right word? Longing.
Longing.
I long.
He looked longingly at the Mojave. Yes. On the lot.
Yes, I did. And I did. I looked longingly at the Mojave, and I looked longingly at Joel's Power Wagon, and I looked longingly at Lance's Bronco. Oh, yeah. and nice. Nick's 4Runner and stuff, because they're all just like really beautiful, you know, rigs, and they all have like all these advanced features that the JK doesn't have. And so, but at the same time too, I love my rig.
Yeah.
And I want to see if there's way to, you know, maybe update it a little bit without getting too cheesy. So,
I might have some ideas on that.
Yeah. Yeah. So don't worry. I'm not going to put JL fenders on it.
I have a bunch of bad ideas for that, but I might have some ideas on that.
Okay. Well, I look forward to having that conversation with you. But you know, it's something where, if you want to watch some pretty epic trip videos, yeah, just go to Will's channel and I'll probably have trip videos too, but, they're going to be more, on the ground, and I'm guessing probably closer to like vlogs.
So that's awesome, Chris. I can't wait, man. It's going to be a really good year. It's going to be a good year for that. And then we have so many trips on the books, and ones that aren't on the books yet that are coming up, which we have talked about a little bit, but as we get deeper into the planning, we're going to bring that up in the podcast and talk more about what we're doing. We've also got some really fun guests coming on. At some point, we're going to get KC250 on. That'll be really fun, talking about the Demonator. Yeah. At some point, we're going to get the guys over at Epic Outfitters in BC. So we're like got this whole BC contingent, but they're doing demon swaps and hemi swaps. And I mean, like they're doing some really cool stuff. They went from like in kind of an overlanding shop to like a full on like off-road, like one-stop shop, whatever you want done to your rig, you can do there. And
if you want to overland, only overland faster, then go to the Epic
yeah.
And Adventure Outfitters.
And we met them at Overland Expo Pacific Northwest, and they just awesome, funny, charming guys, you know.
Oh, so yeah.
It'll be fun having them. And then a slew of other people that we're going to have on the podcast as well as these kind of banters that we tend to do. So if you like this kind of stuff, please subscribe. And if you haven't been over to the Venture Roam channel yet, please go check it out. If you like those videos, subscribe there too. And then be on the lookout for the Frontier State Overland YouTube channel, because apparently that's coming very, very soon. And I for one cannot wait. And I hope to be, maybe I'm already subscribed to your channel, even though it has no videos, but if I'm not, I'll be your first subscriber.
Well, no, it's funny because actually I have several subscribers already, and it's because I think people have seen me on your videos.
Oh, I'm so bummed about that. I really wanted to be number one.
Yeah, but at the same time too, I'm kind of like, oh, okay. So there's a bit of pressure here because I have like 30 subscribers and no videos.
Yeah, you better start making some videos for those 30 subscribers.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, if you're like the first subscribers, I'm gonna have to figure out a way to, you know, say thanks.
Well, I'm gonna go be 31. Yeah, okay. Right now. Yeah, I want to be 31.
Hey, so it's like the Baskin Robbins.
There you go. 31
flavors.
Flavors of boy, that's not going to go anywhere. That's not going to go anywhere good.
Will's first meetup.
In any case, thank you for listening to this podcast. I appreciate you so much. And we'll talk to you next time.